o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch begins now. Now, it took a little bit of figuring out the math, because it's noon where he is. It's 11 where I am. It's 9 where you are. Did you ever figure out if your phone actually changes times with you? Like, what does your phone say what time it is right now?
Yeah, no, the phone is right. It's 9:04. But the thing that's tricky is I'll be looking like, oh, Eleanor has gymnastics practice, and normally it's 6 to 8, but it'll say it's 4 to 6. And I'm thinking, all right, what I put in the calendar, what is it? And then I figure out what time I can face all the FaceTiming and all that stuff. So it's just tricky. And then I'll put in, I got a meeting next week. Is it at 12 or is it at 2? Like, you know what I mean? So sure. It just throws me off. And I think once I get my feet back on the ground in the great state of Wisconsin, I think it flips back. But it just, I just wish it was easier. That's all.
Well, you're a bright guy. You'll figure it out. And speaking of bright guys, and one of my favorites that I covered, who I value, I want to be very clear, I value his friendship, and I'm a little nervous that I may be damaging his friendship by comparing a player that is not a Pro Football Hall of Famer in any way to him, but I'm standing by it. I'm not backing down. Joining us now, the Pro Football Hall of Famer and one of the all-time greats, the GOAT. It is Charles Woodson on Wilde and Tausch. Charles, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Are you mad at me yet, or are you going to be mad at me soon?
Nah, man. Hey, you know what, Wilde, I'm living a good life, man. There's no reason to be mad.
Okay, well, we'll see about that. So let me present to you my argument. Right. And then you can tell me that I'm an idiot, or you can say, hey, I kind of see where you're going here, okay? So I know your first year in Green Bay was not great. We've talked about that many times. And then you came around, and the Green Bay Packers organization came around because you did and won a Super Bowl. But for me, obviously, we all know what a great player you are. That's why you're in Canton. But among the things that was so great about you was the impact you had on all the other guys. And they all, you had a gravitational pull to your teammates. Al, who dressed like a slob before you came along, changed his.
What did Al do to you?
Yeah, that might have been a little harsh.
Oh, snap. Okay.
I'm texting Al right now. He's coming on after Charles.
I'm ruining all friendships day.
So I'll let Al defend himself on that one.
Did not dress to the nines like you did. So you get here, you set that standard, and Nick and Tremont Williams and Al, everyone elevates their fashion game. Tremont Williams has talked many times about not really knowing how to watch film until you came along and you taught him that. And then he became so much better at recognizing things. And by that Super Bowl year, he was seeing things, and that's why he was making some of the plays that he did. And when I look at Xavier McKinney, who has done a Charles Woodson-esque thing by having interceptions in the first three games, I am seeing him have that same impact on a bunch of young guys in his room. They are gravitating to him. You're talking about a two-time All-Pro in Jair Alexander, who's not only happy about the new scheme, but also has really been influenced by Xavier McKinney's presence, and it's changed his attitude and his outlook. So, in that narrow definition, am I wrong to say that about Xavier McKinney? And more importantly, how important do you think it was for your teams for you to be that way and be that type of leader that guys were drawn to?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're off at all. And, you know, I see, you know, the same thing. And so I've been, you know, watching Xavier McKinney, you know, for a couple of years, even when he was with the Giants. I did this, you know, kind of like this little contest a couple of years ago. It was called the Intercept Wines, you know, Player of the Month. And so whatever player would get the most interceptions, I would send them an Intercept Wines gift card for the month. And Xavier was one of the guys who got that. for having the most interceptions in that particular month. And the thing about Xavier McKinney that I like is that when you watch him play, you can understand that he understands what the offense is trying to do to him. Like, there's certain plays that players make where, you know, they've studied the film and they were anticipating something happening because of how the formation was set up or where a certain person was aligned. If a particular receiver was out of a position that he normally doesn't play, and they notice those things and they make plays based off of that. And so McKinney makes those kind of plays. And so it's one thing for a player to, you know, the quarterback scrambling around and he throws it up and you make a pick. And it's another thing when you are attacking the football because you know what's about to happen. And I think he's that type of player. I think that the reason why, you know, those guys gravitate towards him is for that particular reason, is that they're able to, you know, kind of pick his brain as he's looking at film and saying, hey, you know, well, why did you do that? Or what did you see on this particular play? And then he's able to break that down for him. And then, you know, for some guys, it just really takes that for them to say, oh, wow, I get that, you know. And so I think when you look at his game last week and the play that Jair made, you know, I'm not saying this is because of Xavier McKinney or what it is, but Jair knew that play was coming. You know, he saw something in the formation. You know, I always tell – I'm coaching my son's high school team now, and I always tell them to scan the whole formation. Don't just look at the guy you're lining over. Scan the whole formation and let it talk to you. And I'm sure Jair did that same thing. And so maybe that was a part of influence of Xavier McKinney and something that he got from film, that he jumped that route without any hesitation. And I feel like to answer the second part of the question with myself, you know, we used to have, when we would have film study before practice, you always went over, you know, the routes that you were going to see in practice. And so when we went out to practice, what I would do is, you know, whenever, you know, our offense lined up, scout team or whatever, I would step in front of passes or I would pick certain passes off and you know, everybody would be like, hey, man, you know, what did you see right there? I'm like, man, I just watched it in film. You know what I'm saying? It's like, why would I come out here and allow a catch to be made on a play that I just saw in film? And so those things, you know, helped me when I went on the field to recognize things and to react to them. And so on Sundays, there's no hesitation because I've already seen it and I've already reacted, you know, to it. And of course, sometimes the team can do different things, but you just have to be a football player after that. And so I feel like the players, they saw that and they begin to understand, oh, you know, what we see in the film room, the things that we're going over, you know, it's just a correlation. Yeah, the teams are going to do that. You know, they may get to it a different way. You know, sometimes they'll line up in it or sometimes they'll motion to it. But you just have to get your eyes trained to see it. And so I think that, you know, that was probably the biggest impact that I had on the guys that I was around is, hey, when you see it, don't hesitate and just understand that the things that we are going over every single day are the things you're going to see on Sunday. So don't act surprised when it happens.
Charles, who taught you how to watch film? Because you did. There is no doubt you made that impact that Jason is talking about. How did you learn how to effectively start doing that?
I think you kind of piece it all together. I think a lot of it is, you know, just experience, of course, you know, playing a lot of football. But I remember, you know, first getting a taste of it when Vance Befford was my defensive backs coach at the University of Michigan. You know, he used to kind of do the same thing. You know, he would just tell me, hey, man, these things that we're going over in practice, you know, that's what, or on film, that's what you're going to see in the games. And so I made plays based off of that. You know, I remember working with Coach Chuck Pagano for a year or two in Oakland. And he was, man, probably the best at breaking down third down. And so, you know, a piece of that, you know, would come from him. Joe Witt, Marcus Robertson, you know, who I worked when I was mainly a safety in Oakland my last couple of years. You know, he helped me even in that stage of my career. So it's just, you know, over time, you know, you pick up different ways to watch it until you, you know, kind of you formulate your own way of watching the film. And so, you know, my way of watching the film is I like to watch film based on a formation, and I like to see it, you know, the entire way down the field. So if a team was in a 3-by-1 set, I want to see 3-by-1 from, you know, the 0 to the 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 20, coming out all the way to our own 5, and I'd watch 3-by-1 that whole way. Then I'd go to the next formation, and always based off what a team ran the most out of. So if it was 11 personnel that a team used mostly, then that's what I would watch most of the time. If it was 12 personnel, it'd be 12. And then I'd get to the other formation, you know, as they came. But I would spend most of the time on what a team normally does. And so over time, you know, you just develop your way of watching it. I showed those guys, you know, how I watched it. And some of them probably did it that way for a while. And then maybe, you know, they found, you know, in that another way to watch it that was, you know, easier and better for them. And so that's just kind of the way it goes.
Charles, do you have one moment that you can recall that you watched all that film, you saw it, your eyes lit up, and it played out exactly the way you did? You had a bunch of pick sixes, so I'm assuming, is there one time that you're like, man, that preparation really led me to that you can recall?
Yeah, there's one that, you know, I love because I was, you know, Tosh knows that, you know, a lot of times I didn't practice, so I would go down for warm up. And then, you know, Coach Mike would, you know, he would dismiss me and allow me to go back up to the training room. And, you know, sometimes I would go into the gym workout. And then after that, I would go in the training room, and then I would just get, you know, treatment, you know, just trying to, you know, get myself ready for the next week. But I would go in there and I would have my laptop, and I would watch film as I'm sitting on a training table. And I remember noticing something. We were playing Seattle that week. And I noticed that, you know, every time they had, you know, this tight end flexed out, you know, they would run this little bench route with them, which is basically like a little 10-yard out. And so I'm watching this film, and it just kept showing up. And I remember Joe Witt came into the building. I said, Joe, I said, check this out. And so I showed him the route. I said, if they line up in this, Joe, this Sunday, I promise you, I'm picking it off. And he was like, oh, okay, all right. So, you know, that week, we go out there, and they line up in the formation. And, you know, in my mind, I'm just like, oh, my God, here it is. And so I lined up in a way to where it made it look like I was in, you know, I lined up press, so it makes it look like I'm in man-to-man. And so, you know, the number one receiver, he takes off, he runs the go because his job is to run off, and then they're going to run the bench route in behind. And so once I took off on the go route by the number one receiver, my eyes immediately get back inside because, you know, it's going to happen, you know, fairly quick. And as soon as I turned around, that quarterback was loading up to throw that bench route, and I just peeled off my guy and picked the ball off. And, you know, I was like, you know, it was one of my favorites because I remember telling somebody about it. I told Joe, hey, man, I'm picking this off. And it happened. So that's probably one of my favorites.
Talking with Charles Woodson, the Pro Football Hall of Famer and Packers legend. All right, one other thing that I wanted to ask about McKinney as it relates to you. You know this. I was probably annoying to because I did it all the time. But almost after every game, win or lose, I was going to you for perspective. What does this mean? What does this mean going forward? And you were so great with us. I am curious. You know, he's really good with us too. But more important than being good with us, it's being good with your teammates. And Jarrett Bush, Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, Nick Collins, once you became invested in Green Bay, those guys just, I mean, they followed you around. Everything about you, they were cooler because of you. And I am seeing with all these young guys on this roster, right? Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, Ketan Oladapo, they got a lot of young safeties. I'm seeing the same. What is that like to be that guy? And how seriously did you? Because I know you weren't. Your speeches were great during the Super Bowl run, but you tried to lead by example more than talking. What did it mean to have those guys? And what responsibility did you feel as kind of an older brother to all those guys?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, when I first got in, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it was just it was a little rocky at first. So, I mean, all I wanted to do was come in really and just and be myself. I didn't really know how things were going to work out in Green Bay. I had no clue. And even with, you know, how things started, I still ended up with 8 interceptions that year. So, you know, guys were still, you know, right. So guys were still able to say, oh, wow, this guy is disgruntled. He doesn't want to be here. But damn, somehow he still ends up with 8 interceptions, you know, so there must be something.
And he never practices.
And he don't practice, you know. So I think that was important because it was more of a lead by example, you know, kind of a little bit, you know, to myself, like I said, just because I was trying to figure it out, man, you know, what was going on in my world of, you know, football and how I ended up, you know, there in Green Bay. And so, you know, once things kind of settled down, then it just really, you know, there was an acceptance by myself of where I was at, you know, accepting of my teammates. And so we just all became, over time, just became, you know, just closer as teammates. And then ultimately, you're just great friends. And so we all, you know, ended up spending a lot of time together. And it was great just being able to have conversations with all those guys. You know, when young Sam came in, Tremont came in, of course, Nick, who I talked to last night, by the way, we all became great friends. So, it sort of did kind of become like a responsibility, and just trying to, you know, show those guys the right way, you know, trying to show them, you know, how to practice. You know, when I did practice, I know that me and Al used to have, you know, times at practice where we would just take all the reps. And so a part of it was because we were trying to get our looks in, but we were also trying to show guys how to work, you know, and it's different nowadays. Guys don't, you know, you're not allowed to practice, you know, the way we're practicing. They'll make you sit down. But, you know, just trying to show guys, you know, how to work, how to get better, how to be smarter about the game, and understanding that, you know, we're not robots on the field. So don't be a robot. You know, go out there and play the game. You've been playing forever, and have fun doing it. And so I just became started to really enjoy being in that position, being an older player in the league, which is very interesting because McKinney's not very old.
No,
you know, he's still a very young player. So hats off to him for having, you know, those type of leadership qualities early in his career.
All right, speaking of Al, who at least used to be my friend until I said he was a slob with how he dressed, and now that won't be anymore, which, by the way, me criticizing anyone's fashion
say,
is
nice
pretty pathetic.
Well done.
But I remember, I mean, there was nobody better, and maybe nobody better in league history at press man coverage than him, right? But I remember him always talking about how, you know, my interception numbers are never good because that's how you have to play. You don't have vision. So he had 1 year where he was all pro or pro bowl, and he had 2 picks that year because that's how good he was at that skill. When you watch the Packers now, we hear Jeff Hafley talks so much about vision and break as their coverage style. I'm curious, because you know the game so well, help me understand why this is working so well. They went from having 7 picks all of last season, they've got 7 picks through 3 games. How does it change when you have vision to the quarterback?
Well, that's where the recognition comes into play. You can have vision on the quarterback and not make any plays. But when you look at the play that Jair made, you know, this is my point. It's like when you line up and that offense breaks the huddle, you're watching for different clues. You're not just out there to have vision on the quarterback. Like it makes it sound, you know, very simplistic, you know, just have vision on the quarterback. But that offensive formation, their split, it's all talking to you. And so that's where the vision comes into play. It's like, okay, we've been watching film all week. You know, when this team comes out and line up and there's equal spacing between all the receivers, they're going to run all hitches. And so when I watch that film, I see all these hitches. I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure Jair saw that on film. Mm-hmm. And so there's vision of the entire offense. There's vision on the quarterback. And then at that point, now you got to have the mindset of, I can't hesitate. Because if he hesitates at all, it's either a pass breakup or the guy catches the ball. And we don't want either of those. We don't like pass breakups. We like interceptions. And so Jair stuck his foot in the ground, and he went and got it based off what he saw. And there was, if you watch, there's no hesitation. And so it's that vision, and also the you got to have you know, the confidence in the vision that you have, that that's what they're going to do. And he stuck his foot in the ground. He made the play, and it was beautiful to see.
Charles, you look at the league nationally with your job and what you're doing. What, why would the New York Giants not keep Xavier McKinney? He's young. He's a captain. Like, do you just sometimes wonder? It's obviously it's great for us as Packer fans, but what would the Giants be thinking when they don't keep him?
Well, it's the same team that got rid of Saquon Barkley. You tell me. They're not very good at what they do in terms of, you know, keeping the right people around. You know what I'm saying? At least not as of late. It wasn't like that, of course, when we played them, when they were putting together those defensive linemen that were, you know, giving us hell every week or every playoff. But yeah, this group, I'm not understanding. You know, you have a young player who you brought into your system as a young man, a young rookie, and he has performed at a very high level. And for you to look at that and say, you know what, we've seen enough. You know, we'll send him on to the next team. You know, it makes absolutely no sense. You know, he's a guy that you should have tried to do everything in your power to keep him. Now, if Xavier went in there asking for $200 million, then all right, I get that. But you know, I don't know him that well to know what he was looking for at the time. You know, but yeah, I don't understand. You know, how you get rid of a young guy like that who's, you know, just in his mid-20s.
Yeah, last one for me, Charles. You talked about coaching your kids' team. You're a Hall of Famer. You are. You know, you just went through in great detail how you did this stuff. I've coached my kids. The attention to detail, not there. How's your patience level with this? Because it can't be easy when you have all this knowledge and you're trying to instill it in these young kids. Give me a little vision as far as what Charles Woodson, the coach, looks like.
Yeah, it's hard, Wildy. I always envision, because I never liked any coach that yelled. Like that was the worst thing to me. And I would always, man, I was combative in that setting. You know what I'm saying? If the coach ever raised his voice, it's like, man, come on, man, you can get out of my face with that. I find myself raising my voice, Wildy, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all, man. So I'm trying. You know, I've had to apologize to the kids, you know, and say, hey, man, I'm sorry, because this is something that I never like to do. But somehow it just happens, because, like you said, you know, you see certain things, or you're trying to coach certain things, and you think you're putting it in a way that, you know, it's very easy and you know, easy for them to learn, easy for them to retain. And sometimes maybe it doesn't come across like you think it's coming across, and, you know, something's not done the way you want it to be done, and it gets frustrating. But I think in this short time I've gotten a little bit better, you know. And so I'm trying to keep my poise out there, man. But it can be rough at times. But I'm enjoying it. It's been great, you know, working around the kids and, you know, just trying to get them to see a little bit of what I see in the game. And like yesterday was really, very interesting. We were at practice and I'm talking, you know, to one of the linebackers and trying to get his eyes in the right place, you know, on run plays and what they should be looking at. And towards the end of practice, man, he started doing it, started seeing it. And you can see when they start doing something that works, and, you know, there's kind of like the light bulb that goes off, you know, you can see the joy, you know, in their face, and it gives you joy. So I think that's the part about it, man, that really makes it a lot of fun and worthwhile. So I'm enjoying it.
All right, before we let you go, then, I have to ask, because this is how Nick Collins started. Nick Collins started, you know, after he retired, he's driving the kids to school. Then he's coaching the Pop Warner team. Then he's coaching in high school. Now he's at his alma mater, Bethune-Cookman. Does this mean 5, 6 years from now, when the Badgers are playing Michigan, they'll be coached by head coach Charles Woodson?
Hey, here's what I would say to that. I never in a million years thought that Al Harris would be a coach. that would be your answer, man. I try to never say never to anything. So, I don't foresee myself really going beyond what it is right now. So, I'll leave it at the fact that Al Harris is a coach right now, and get this, would love to be a head coach.
Yeah.
How about that? How about that? So, I mean, that you talk about somebody who's come full circle in terms of a guy who only wanted to be on the line of scrimmage, wanted to play on the right side of the formation, wanted to be man-to-man, wanted to know who his guy was. That guy is coaching, you know what I'm saying, a defense. Like, has his hand on everybody. So, that's pretty always – every time I call him, I talk to him. I'm like, man, I can't believe that you coach it, man. So it's cool to see him out there doing his thing.
All right, well, don't call him for a while because I want you to forget that I said he was a slob before you talk to him again. Charles, we appreciate you so much. Your insights are great, and I feel like a winner today because Charles Woodson himself didn't say that I was crazy to make the comp between him and what Xavier McKinney is doing for the Packers.
You changed the narrative.
I didn't change it. That's not true. All right. Tausch and I will fight without you. Charles, you're the absolute best. We appreciate you so much. Thanks.
No problem, man. And I hope that all of the Packer fans know that Woodson Whiskey is available in your state and Intercept Wines as well. So we never can get off the air without, interjecting a little business in there with you.
I would say the least we can do is allow you to say that. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Always, man. Appreciate it.
That is the great Charles Woodson. And again, if you just listening to us talk to him, I think fans can hear it when you listen to him. You can see why guys were drawn to him. He's just got that quality about him. And whether or not Xavier McKinney becomes the player that he became, that's a pretty tall order to ask. But you do see those moments when you're around those young guys that are gravitating to Xavier McKinney. All right, we'll break things down. We'll get to that, and we'll talk a little bit about maybe some other aspects of the Packers as they get ready for the Vikings on Sunday. More next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
I said go, baby, go, go, go.
Thanks again to Charles Woodson. If you missed that, you can go back on our YouTube channels later or in podcast form, Wisconsin On Demand, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, all available later today. One thing that he said that obviously you agreed with because it was the premise of your question, do you think your guy Goody, who we know... what was it? Bludgeoned the GM for the other New York franchise in the Aaron Rodgers trade.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Goody was like, why the hell are these guys letting this guy walk? I mean, he did pay a pretty penny for Xavier McKinney. But
I don't know. Did he?
As you said, the structure of that deal left it open. If he turned out to be a disappointment, he has definitely been everything they had hoped for and more through three games. But I'm not saying that he's thinking, oh, maybe I should second guess why they're letting this guy go that I like so much. Like, he had to be thinking, what's wrong with these guys?
Yeah, I think, and I always say this, because really good organizations, and for the record, the Giants, as Charles said, have been a really good organization over the years. A lot of Super Bowls. They've been a thorn in our fingers for a while. Nice. With what they've done in the playoffs against us. Yeah, so it's not like they're an inept organization like others. But you always wonder why someone would let a young talent – now, you can understand why you let a 29- or 30-year-old go. You think their better days are behind them.
Yep.
That's not X. You're 24. Captain. Alabama guy. And you do wonder, like, what am I missing? mm-hmm. because, you know, smart guys are going to look at it and say, well, there must be something. And maybe this is a case where there wasn't any, just ineptitude.
They're just stupid.
Ineptitude. And, yeah. well, we're not going to value that position. Okay, we'll take him. That's kind of how this all shook itself out. So long way to go, but obviously you do look at that because mm-hmm. when – who's the Claypool? Why would Pittsburgh not want a young wideout? That's it. Well, mm-hmm. they got to pay him, and obviously Pittsburgh was right, Bears mm-hmm. wrong. And that's one of those – the deal that you don't make sometimes are the best deals that are done. So you always have that question when a really good young player comes to market, why? And in this case, the answer is ineptitude by a different front office.
No one was asking that when Johnson & Sons Paving said, okay, we don't need this Tauscher fella on our team on a regular basis. Once was enough on this one parking lot.
Well, get ready for spring and do it now. Call Johnson & Sons Paving to make sure no pavement hazards get worse over the winter. Potholes, cracked curbs, drainage issues. If those things are bad now, they're not going to get better. Call Johnson & Sons Paving to get it fixed today. Schedule a free, no obligation quote and a walkthrough of your pavement. They'll be able to see signs of asphalt pavement work needed by spotting, fatigue cracking, standing water, warping, buckling, sinking pavement, or more. Don't scare away customers or tenants with that bad curb appeal. Book now, save money later. JohnsonAndSonsPaving.com.
Woe Nelly is next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com. If the topic is good, the guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Sirocco's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide.
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for...
Whoa, Nelly!
On Wildy and Tausch.
All right, so we as a show have not addressed the UNLV thing yet. What do you make of this? Matthew Sluka, the quarterback.
Sluka.
UNLV is undefeated. He is a transfer to UNLV. He's got him, I think, 4-0, and he is now stepping away, so he's still eligible for his redshirt year because he claims the school has not lived up to its NIL agreement for him. So if he's not getting paid, he's stepping away, and the school is now refuting, saying that he and his representation are changing the number that they expected he would be given and all that stuff. What do you make of this entire situation for a college football team we would not otherwise be talking about?
Well, I'm going to say this. There is a defensive lineman for the USC Trojans, Bear Alexander, who has bounced around. He has also decided to do that. So thank you very much. I mean, he's a player that we would be seeing this weekend, and he has decided to kind of pull the same thing that Sluka at UNLV does. Listen, man, the NCAA has completely botched this whole thing. It was butchered from the jump. This is the Wild West. This is going to happen. And none of us, I can't speak for Jason. I certainly can speak for Jesse. If Jesse Nelson was put in place here, that he was supposed to be paid a certain amount of money, and he was not paid, and it was not coming due, and they were not going to pay him, Jesse Nelson would not be working. Don't think Jason would. Fairly certain I wouldn't. That's how this works. And this is the system that you've allowed to creep in. So do I think it's awesome? Absolutely not. I think it's a disaster. I think it's brutal on all accounts. It hurts the game. It hurts the player. It hurts the team. It hurts the teammates, everything involved. I don't know enough detail about Sluka and what was promised, what wasn't, what was in writing, what wasn't, blah, 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 blah. But I do know this. Your team is 3-0. Fan base out in Las Vegas probably is excited about this team, and now it's imploded. And I don't think this will be the last team. And I put this all at the feet of the NCAA for not doing anything and allowing this system of complete foolishness to continue on. Somebody, an adult in the room, needs to step up, take hold of this, and get it fixed, because college football is not in a good place at all as we sit here right now.
I agree with everything Tausch said. What are they going to do about it? This has to reach a point where it's like the NFL, where you sign contracts and you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. Like, this is what you agreed to. This is in writing. This is what your NIL income is going to be. Like, I don't know how it works logistically in terms of, you know, does something come up in the middle of the season then and you get to add that? I don't know how that works. All I know is that what they're doing now opens the door for all kinds of, to use Tausch's favorite word, malfeasance. Whoa, Nelly.
Whoa, Nelly!
Dallas Cowboys.
Big Mike!
Big
Al Harris.
Big Mike.
Very, very, very frustrating.
We'll see if they're still frustrated after tonight. Cowboys Giants, which I think, you know, Charles Wood. Jason got after Al Harris, who's a member of the Cowboys coaching staff.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
And Charles Woodson got after the Giants.
That was a mistake. Slob was strong.
Both teams are 1-2. Both teams have big question marks. Will you be watching tonight's game, and how significant is it for whom?
Well, what time is that on?
5:15 Pacific time for you, old T, on Amazon Prime.
I don't know if I'll be watching it. I tend to think I'll be able to watch the second half of it.
Does Dav have Prime out there, or do you got to get him hooked up?
That's a great question. I legit have not watched 1 second of television, so I don't know.
Wow.
Since I've been out here. I've been reading, reading books and watching stuff and commiserating and talking. I would like to. I think both teams are going nowhere fast. The question I have is, I just don't know where Mike's at with, is he going to make it through? This defense is god awful. Like, they can't stop a nosebleed. And until you can do that, luckily the Giants aren't very good on offense, so you got that going. But it's a tough spot. Mike knew that going in, that this was going to be a tough year. You lost a bunch of players. You didn't really bring anybody in. Guys were holding out and not playing and practicing. So I think the Giants are worse. I think Dallas will win. We'll find a way to win. And I think for Big Mike, that's what I'm hoping for.
Do you think he makes it through the year?
That's what I was going to ask, but I didn't want to be a jerk. So I'll let you do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like... I feel like Jerry Jones is the version of that meme. I know you're a big meme guy now.
Meme it up, yeah.
Where the guy is walking with his girlfriend, and he's turning and looking the other way at the girl that just walked by. Yeah, that's the face, Jesse. Good. That was really good. Too bad we're on the radio and not everyone's watching on video, because that was perfect. Like, you know he would love to have Bill Belichick, right?
I don't know, Woody. Does he want to give up control? He had Jimmy Johnson. He didn't like it. He wanted to bring in Switzy. Switzy came, got him a chip, and they haven't done jack since. He wants to control. And I do wonder how much is about winning. Like, I think it's a fair question that you ask.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike McCarthy is the winningest coach in the history for now, percentage-wise. I don't think he will be by the end of this season. And this will be his last year, probably in Dallas. And then do you bring in Belichick? And because you're old enough that you will say, maybe I need this. And then, but you ask, Belichick didn't win much without Tom Brady. So there's a myriad of questions that have to be answered. And I'm glad I'm not a Cowboy fan.
We'll have less sleep and we'll be grumpy.
The bottom line is they didn't extend his contract. And when a guy is on a one-year deal, which is what Mike McCarthy is on, and he'll be a free agent after the season, tell me that you don't really trust me to be the guy without really telling me that you don't trust me to be the guy. That's the message they sent.
Mm-hmm.
So we root for Big Mike around here and Al Harris and everybody down there that we care about, but it is less than ideal, the situation down there. All right, that's it for Woe Nelly. We will wrap things up next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
All right, we're almost out of time. I know Jesse will get Charles Woodson posted to all the various things, but that was worth the wait. He was really good. So if you missed him, get caught up on that when you have a chance later today. And I, there were a lot of really good moments, but I was disgruntled. His word, disgruntled. And I still had 8 picks. That was a highlight. There's no denying it. I'm excited to share that with Xavier McKinney. Quickly, if a great player like him had said those types of things about you, what would that have meant to you as a player?
Awesome. For as much as you love getting adulation from fans and from media people or whatnot, to have it come from someone that has done it and at that level, that would mean everything.
You, the Californian, will still be with us again tomorrow before Badgers, USC, and then maybe you move back home and see your family again. He will be live, maybe from a mountaintop, maybe from Matt Davenport's living room, whatever the case. We look forward to tomorrow's show. Thanks for coming along for the ride with us today. Have a great day. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wildy and Tausch? Presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full show podcasts are available free on Wisconsin On Demand.